101.
Quiet, please.
Ladies and gentlemen,
you ready for the big show?
You're ready.
In exactly 15 seconds, we'll be on the air.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
Look, if you hate cops just because they're cops, the next time you get in trouble, call a crackhead.
Honestly provocative talk with Lars Larson.
I may be a white boy, but I'm not stupid.
Broadcasting across the Pacific Northwest and covering Oregon, Washington, and Idaho on the Radio Northwest Network.
Lars.
And now.
Then we're going to kick the Biden crime family out of the White House.
Here's your host.
My memory is so bad, I let you speak.
Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's Conspiracy Theory Thursday, and it's my pleasure to be with you. I want you to consider this question. Oregon's leaders apparently want hard drugs to remain legal, even though the body bags are piling up. More than 1,000 people died of fentanyl overdose last year alone. And it looks as though we're going to see the same kind of result this year. That is a result of the de facto legalization of Measure 110. And if you say, Lars, that's old news. The legislature fixed that. Well, we're going to talk about the fix and how that fix is being deliberately undermined and will be absolutely meaningless when the officials who are implementing it, at least in the city, in the largest region population-wise in the state, I'm going to tell you why they have deliberately sabotaged it. They want people to stay addicted to the drugs. They're not going to push them into addiction treatment. And we're going to end up with more dead people. In fact, it almost becomes like a circus where you have a whole set of rules, and the rules basically mean go ahead and keep on taking those hard drugs. We'll collect the bodies when they fall on the streets, and they will, and nothing is going to change. But let me get specific about that in just a moment. First, welcome to the Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network. I'm glad to have you with me. If you want to join the best conversation in talk journalism, it happens right here every day at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. If you call in as a naysayer and you disagree with me, maybe you see the advantages to having hard drugs effectively legalized in a state, even though the bodies are piling up. I'd be glad to hear the naysayer argument at 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. Our X poll today is going to raise an interesting issue, and I imagine I'm going to hear a lot about it. As you know, young men in America between the ages of 19 and 26, and by the way, that includes illegal alien young men as well, are required to register for the draft, and there are penalties for not registering for the draft. Now, does America have a draft? It does not have a draft today. It may never have a draft again. We don't know. But they want young men to register so that all of that paperwork is out of the way should the Congress or the president see the need to actually draft Americans. We've had an all-volunteer force since the mid-1970s when the Vietnam War ended. But now, Senate Democrats have added language to the annual defense authorization bill. That's the money for the Pentagon that requires women to register for the draft. Now, Republicans don't like it. Social conservatives don't like it. I don't like it. I don't think it's necessary. I don't think it's desirable. But should America require women to register for the draft? I would say no to that. And consider this as well. We're only asking about registering for the draft, because even if women were registered for the draft, what would have to happen is both the military leadership of the country and likely the president as well and the Congress in the years ahead would have to decide to actually draft women. And they could also decide, well, we're going to call up all the men, but we're not going to call the women. I'm sure that's going to go to court as well. But just for the short run, the question is posed by Senate Democrats on Capitol Hill who said, we want language in the law that authorizes funding for the Pentagon that requires women to register for the draft. I think it's an absolutely stupid idea. I don't think it would lead to women being drafted into military service, even if this country ended up in a situation where we would need to draft people. I would prefer that we stay with an all-volunteer military, although the Biden administration has laid waste to the military in such a way the military can't even make its recruiting goals now, and that's a serious concern. You can find the X poll at Lars Larson Show on X. You can also find it on our website at LarsLarson.com, and brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Find them at UltimateTruckService.com. And I'll do a quick mention. Hollywood actor Donald Sutherland has died at the age of 88. I'll have a few things to say about him a little bit later on this hour. But for now, Oregon's leaders seem to want to keep hard drugs legal. They finally accepted a so-called reform of that legislation at the legislature this year. But what they've done is they've created a system that doesn't change the equation. If you remember, Measure 110 said, we're going to effectively legalize hard drugs. Now, when people say, well, no, technically it's still illegal. Yeah, if you got caught with hard drugs, meaning fentanyl, heroin, methamphetamine, cocaine, and the like, under Measure 110, until the legislature changed it, all that you would get is a $100 ticket, and if you made one phone call and talked to somebody on the phone about possibly getting treatment, that was enough to wipe out even the $100 fine. So it effectively became a crime that actually didn't have any consequences at all. And the end result of that, a lot fewer people going into treatment for drug addiction and a lot more dead people of drug overdose. So what the legislature said was, we have to do something about this. So they turned it into a misdemeanor. But they also allowed something that most of the people in the legal profession I've talked to had never heard of before. You've heard of diversion when it comes to drunk driving, where if you get your first drunk driving ticket or charge and you haven't hurt anybody and you haven't killed anybody, you can take diversion. You have to go off to a bunch of classes, satisfy some requirements, but you don't get the charge. In this case, they invented something brand spanking new called deflection. And at the time it was put forward in the legislature, nobody would define it. Nobody could define it. Nobody even knew what it meant. Well, now we know what it means, because starting this fall, this is from the reporting that's been done the last day or so on how Multnomah County is going to handle this. Starting this fall, people found with street drugs, meaning hard drugs, in Multnomah County will get a choice. You can be arrested, or you can go to a drop-off center, the deflection center. Well, what happens there? You check in and you leave. And can you do that over and over and over again? Here's what the reporting says. Under the proposal now taking shape, after lawmakers overhauled Measure 110, the county will not require people caught with drugs to enroll in any kind of substance abuse treatment. It also does not limit how often a person can opt for so-called deflection over arrest. Now, all deflection means, the police pick you up, they take your drugs away, they drop you off at the deflection center, you check in, and you walk right out the door. And if you want to do the same thing tomorrow and Saturday and Sunday and Monday, you'll be allowed to do that. The person will only need to check in at the drop-off center to satisfy what this brand new idea called deflection. In other words, there's no requirement at all. In a lot of ways, it's even less potential punishment than you would have faced under Measure 110. It keeps hard drugs effectively legal, at least in Multnomah County. Now, the county was told to deflect people with small amounts of drugs. By the way, small amounts of drugs could include about 40 OxyContin pills. If anybody considers that a small amount, I'd love to take that phone call. All of this takes effect September 1st. People found with fentanyl and other hard drugs could have been charged with a misdemeanor, but the county has said, we don't want anybody charged at all. And for example, the folks who are running this whole show, for instance, a business owner can report drug abuse outside his business. Officers can respond and just move the individual along. And by the way, Multnomah County has a brand new DA, and he has, according to, he hasn't come on the show, but he says he has been completely cut out of any of the discussions about how to handle this in Multnomah County. So, expect the body bags to keep on piling up, at least in Multnomah County. It's a Thursday. It's the Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network. Mount St. Helens in the Northwest Nonsense coming up next.
Nixon was wrong about a lot of things, but he's right about this.
People have got to know whether or not their president's a crook.
What say you, Joe Biden? This is the Lars Larson Show.
That makes a lot of sense. A lot of nonsense.
Right. You're bloody well right. You know you got a right to say.
This is the Northwest Nonsense.
How much longer do we have to sit for this nonsense?
That great moment every day where Lars brings you the cold, hard facts without any liberal wokeness from the Daily Dead fish wrapper or mainstream media bias.
As you've likely been hearing in the news today, Mount St. Helens is getting ready to blow again after recharging for the last 44 years. Scientists say they're seeing the kind of small earthquakes that indicate magma is moving under the mountain, and at some point, in some form, it's going to be released. But have no fear. Scientists have offered their reassurances. Yeah, right. Well, here's what I know about the calming words of the U.S. Geological Survey. I covered the 1980 eruption of Mount St. Helens from the first signs in late March to the catastrophic May 18th blowout. USGS offered us reassurance in twice-daily press briefings. 6 months after that, I attended an after-action meeting between USGS scientists and reporters. We pointed out to the scientists that all of us had been asking before the eruption, what's the worst that could happen? Now, let me say parenthetically, this is one of the things reporters do in a standard way. If something is happening, no matter what it is, you generally want to get the guardrails out there. You want to say, what's the worst that could happen? What's the best we can expect? And then where is it likely to go? It's a good way to inform people about what's going on. Well, the scientists before the eruption described nothing like what had actually happened. Well, that night in that after-action meeting, the scientists admitted they downplayed the risks to us because they knew it could blow up just like it did. They told us they held back that little tidbit because we knew you reporters would tell the public and the public would have overreacted. Huh. Overreacted. When the mountain finally blew, 57 died. Four died in the red zone. 53 people died in the government-identified safe zones. And that idiot, Jimmy Carter, came to Portland and actually blamed the people who died for not listening to the government. In point of fact, the people who believed and kept on working and recreating, camping and hiking and all that in the areas deemed safe by the government. They died because they believed the government's assurances. Dozens of people in safe zones only escaped by the skin of their teeth. Consider today's USGS reassurance in that context. And if you're so inclined, factor in all the other things the science has told Americans over the last 4 years and how well that worked out. Our question of the day, how to solve the problem of taxes on tips, because President Trump has, of course, proposed an end to all taxation of all tip income. Members of Congress have actually introduced the bill to make that happen. Well, Vanessa wrote in, Lars, my answer to the tipping problem, I buy 1/4, 1/2, and full-ounce silver coins. I use those for tips. Keep in mind that a few weeks ago, a waitress told my family and I the restaurant had to report X amount on the food bill as the tip, even if they don't get a tip. I like doing the silver coins because the person can hold on to it or re-gift it to somebody else. Anyway, just a thought. And now today's Daily Grill.
Insane.
Are you
ridiculous.
They get more and more ridiculous.
Flat out dumb.
You're even dumber than I thought.
Who deserves today's Lars Grill of the Day?
Maybe they're just really, really stupid.
Find out right now.
I'm going to give today's Daily Grill to Jessica Vega Peterson, the elected head of one of the most populous counties in the Pacific Northwest, Multnomah County, who is paying an outside consultant for on-the-job training, as our friends at the Taxpayers Association put it. She's sticking taxpayers with the bill. Believe it or not, Multnomah County Chair Jessica Vega Peterson, who ran for that job, and you had to assume she was claiming to be competent at doing the job, she began working in January with a leadership coach. That's 1 year into her time as the county's chief executive. A year into the job, she decides she needs a leadership coach at $200 an hour, and that began back in January. Now imagine that. She's had at least 6 one-on-one sessions with a consultant by the name of Kathleen Holt, who is charging $200 an hour to help Jessica Vega Peterson hone her ability to communicate with fellow county commissioners, according to the invoices, the interviews, and the chair's public calendar. So, you run for a job, you tell the voters you can do the job well, and then once you get on the job, you start charging the taxpayers thousands of dollars so you can get advice on how to do the job. I'd love to talk to Jessica Vega Peterson about that. I don't think she's likely to want to answer that, and she's probably not going to tell voters either. Today's best email of the day, but you can always send more to talk@LarsLarson.com. Brought to you by Window Nation semi-annual sale. It's on now with 50% off and no interest for 5 years, plus bonus savings. Call 866-90-NATION or WindowNation.com. Jim writes in, Lars, here are six conundrums of socialism in the United States. America is capitalist and greedy, and yet half our population is subsidized. Half the population is subsidized, yet they consider themselves victims. They think they're victims, yet their representatives run the government. Their representatives run the government, and yet the poor keep getting on poorer. The poor get poorer, and yet they have things that people in other countries can only dream about. They have things that people in countries dream about, and they want America to be more like those other countries. It makes you wonder who's doing the math. And by the way, we're advised not to judge all Muslims by the actions of a few lunatics, but we're encouraged to judge all gun owners by the actions of a few lunatics. Funny how that works. And it seems like we constantly hear about how Social Security is going to run out of money, but we never hear about welfare or food stamps running out of money. What's interesting is the first group worked for their money. The second did not. Am I only missing something here? Signed, Jim. Jim, thanks very much. I appreciate the email. Send those emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. And vote in our poll on X today. Should America require women to register for the draft? My vote is a no vote, and I've explained it. And by the way, registering for the draft does not mean that the draft is ever coming back, although it could. Today's X poll is found at Lars Larson Show and at LarsLarson.com and brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Find them at ultimatetruckservice.com. Now, I mentioned the passing of Donald Sutherland, and it was actually confirmed by his son, you know, Jack Bauer, Kiefer Sutherland. And he posted this. It was actually very, very well said. With a heavy heart, I tell you that my father, Donald Sutherland, has passed away. I personally think one of the most important actors in the history of film. Never daunted by a role, good, bad, or ugly. Thank President Snow there. He loved what he did and did what he loved, and nobody can ask more for that. A life well lived. And I thought I'd share one soundbite from Donald Sutherland in the movie Backdraft. Take a listen.
I sent away for a copy of that Life magazine with your picture on the cover. It's a collectible.
Who's doing this, Ronald?
Wrong question. Who isn't? Didn't a spark, is it? Because there isn't enough damage, and it wouldn't have been any fun. Doesn't an insurance pro, because there isn't any profit.
Well, who does that leave?
That's his tool. How does he do it? How does he talk to the fire?
By the way, I'd point out that Donald Sutherland was the only big-name actor in the movie Animal House that was filmed in Eugene at the University of Oregon about the time I was going to school there. An interesting side story about Donald Sutherland. At the time, he was busy. He was interested in the money. They offered him $20,000 to be in Animal House. He was the only big-name star in the movie. Belushi and Aykroyd would be big-name stars later on. He was offered 20,000 and 2 percentage points of the movie's gross. He said no. His agent said he doesn't want 2% of nothing, so he got $35,000. That extra 2% would have been worth about $2.8 million because Animal House did very, very well. It's sad to see or tell of the passing of Donald Sutherland, dead today at the age of 88. Back in a moment, it's the Radio Northwest Network.
The Lars Larson Show. Gun control explained.
Want to stop drunk drivers from killing sober drivers? Ban sober drivers. That's how gun control works.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the program. It's a pleasure to be with you on Conspiracy Theory Thursday. And it's great to have you with me on the program. If you want to dial in, it's 866-HEY-LARS. We'll get to calls here in just a moment. But I think one of the most disastrous policies ever adopted, and it was pushed by the great Barack Hussein Obama, who said more than a decade ago that he would solve homelessness by one policy, and he would push that policy on every city in America that gets federal housing money from Housing and Urban Development. And that policy was housing first, meaning that if you find somebody who's homeless, drug addicted, mentally ill, and everything else, you get them housing first, and then you worry about the addiction and the other problems later on. And it's been a disastrous policy. Not only did it not solve homelessness in a decade, as Obama promised it would, it's actually made it worse. And so I was really gratified to see that there's a group that is pushing across the state of Washington, and I hope the whole same thing happens in Oregon, that says, let's do treatment first instead. And Nate Nearing joins me now. Nate, welcome to the program, and explain to my audience what you do and why you're involved in this effort.
Hey, thanks for having me on the program. I really appreciate it, Lars.
You bet.
I'm the director for Future 42's Snohomish County Project. And one of the things that we've been doing is working on, as you said, a treatment-first approach to homelessness. You know, we've seen the failed progressive policies of housing first and harm reduction when it comes to folks who are struggling on the street with homelessness and addiction and mental illness. And as you said, we've only gone backward as millions and really hundreds of millions throughout the Puget Sound region and all throughout the West Coast have been poured into these progressive programs. We've only seen increases in homelessness, increases in drug overdose deaths, and increases in crime rates. And so I think what's abundantly clear is that we need to try something different. And that's exactly what this Real Solutions to Homelessness pledge that we have put forward and encouraged local elected officials to sign on to does.
And you're trying to get government officials to sign on to this. So you're going to cities and counties and other jurisdictions saying, sign on to this and abandon the housing first idea?
That's correct. Yeah, local government is really where the rubber meets the road on this issue in terms of the response to homelessness and addiction. And so we've approached city council members, county officials, and others in local government throughout the state, encouraging them to sign on. And there's a ton of great momentum so far. I think we've got just about 60 elected officials in Washington State who have already signed on to the pledge.
Have you been able to get any actual governments? That is, you've gone to individual politicians or elected folks. Have you been able to get a county or a city or other agencies to sign on and say, yeah, that's the right approach instead of what Puget Sound is doing, instead of what Portland is doing?
Yeah, it's a good question. We have not approached governments as a whole. We've been approaching individual elected officials to encourage them to sign on to this. And then the hope is that if they sign on, the pledge outlines 7 specific policy approaches that can be taken.
By the way, I love your list. I love the list you put together. Tell my audience
Thank
what's
you.
On it.
Sure. Yeah, just a few examples. I won't go through the whole thing. You can view it online by searching Future 42 Real Solutions to Homelessness Pledge. But just a couple of examples are, when subsidized housing is from the taxpayers is being given, we require treatment for the individual who's struggling with addiction receiving that housing. Another is defunding harm reduction programs such as heroin injection sites or outlawing them through land use measures. Another is mandatory minimum sentencing for repeat offenders. And then there's a few others as well that deal with panhandling and encampments and so on and so forth. And so the idea is get local elected officials to sign on to this, and then when they go back to their city or county, whatever their jurisdiction is, they can take these policies, and we've got examples of cities and counties who have actually adopted these successfully, and so we can hand the local elected official the language they need to propose, and then they can, of course, adjust that however they like. The idea would be they take that then to their jurisdiction, introduce it, and hopefully get some of these things passed, and as we see that momentum begin to build throughout the state, I think we'll see a shift in the approach to these critical issues and hopefully see some good progress.
See, I'm hoping that you get a couple of county commissioners who go back to their county commission and say, why shouldn't we adopt this approach? And that the other county commissioners say, well, say, let's put it to a vote. How many people in favor of saying, if you're drug addicted and you're going to get subsidized housing, you need to get into treatment, and we'll give the housing or, you know, allow the housing, whatever way it's given, to those people who are willing to take treatment. Otherwise, the problem isn't solved. All you've got is a heroin addict who's now living in subsidized housing. But if you get somebody who's in treatment and arguably able to maybe beat the drug, and the reward is to get some subsidized housing and all the other goodies that come with it, at least you're making some progress. Put that to a vote in most counties. I would think some county commissioners, even the more liberal ones, would say, well, I can't very well vote against that. It's too sensible, right?
I think that's exactly right. And as you said at the beginning of the show, you know, the housing first idea of let's just get somebody under shelter and then we don't have to worry about anything else. We don't have to deal with the underlying drug addiction or mental illness. It's just pure fiction. That's not going to solve anything. And we've seen that, you know, in places like Seattle and throughout the Puget Sound and in the entire West Coast, really, where we've not only not made any progress, but we've actually gone backwards. And so I think this idea You know, if you're looking at somebody who's perhaps a victim of domestic violence or a family who's down their luck financially, yeah, housing first might work great for folks in those situations. But when we're talking about somebody with a severe addiction to something like fentanyl or meth or heroin, the idea that we can just hand them a room key and say, you know, go enjoy your new unit or hotel or whatever it is, and that's going to solve their underlying issues is just absurd. And so we're seeing, you know, drug contamination in a lot of these units that people are using. We're seeing overdose deaths in these units. And so we really need to look at a more comprehensive treatment-first approach, specifically when we're looking at folks who are dealing with drug addiction with fentanyl.
I'm talking to Nate Nearing, who's the Sahoma County Director for Future 42, with the treatment-first. You know, Nate, I mentioned from time to time, my dad's long gone, but he was a hardcore alcoholic. And when Tina and I found an apartment for him in the Portland area years ago, when he came to this area for a while, the last thing I would have done was put him over the liquor store or in between two other apartments with guys in it who like to booze. It's just a bad right. idea. And I just wonder the thinking of the people who have the low barrier. That's the euphemism for you can still shoot heroin and use fentanyl if you live in this housing, that you put, even if somebody was trying hard to beat the drugs, and you say, we're going to put you in a building that's full of other drug addicts who are allowed to yep. continue using drugs. Oh, and by the way, you're probably a target for all the drug sellers because they know where all their customers are. It seems like yep. it's designed to sabotage the person, even the rare person who might say, well, I'm going to try to get clean now.
Yeah, no, that's exactly it. It's hard to fathom the logic behind it. I don't know if there is any. King County Executive Gal Constantine just last week made a comment, and I think it was the State of the County address that
you know. By the way, Joel, see if you can find that soundbite because I wanted to play it. But go ahead, yeah. Nate. Tell them what this idiot said. I'm sorry. I'm going to call him an idiot. You don't have to.
Essentially, what he said is that, you know, there's a significant homeless problem, but drug addiction and mental illness don't play a role. There is no underlying drug addiction mental illness issue, which is just, it's pure fiction, right? There's, you know, there's nothing to back that up. There's reports nationally of self-identified, you know, individuals who are homeless who will self-identify that they have an issue with drug addiction or mental illness over 50%. So the truth of the matter is a vast majority of people who are on the streets are addicted to drugs or struggling with mental illness or some combination of the two. But, you know, when elected officials say things like that, like drugs aren't part of the problem, mental illness isn't part of the problem, and then they go and propose solutions that don't do anything for those who are struggling with drugs or mental illness, that's when you get the problems that we're seeing throughout the Puget Sound and the West Coast.
Nate, the idea was the pet idea of that great constitutional scholar, Barack Obama. And so much of what he did worked out so very, very wrong. Nate, keep up the good work. We're going to direct people to the website. We'll share the list. It's a great list of requirements. If you want public housing, you're going to have to get in the treatment program. If you're not in treatment, you don't get the taxpayer-funded housing. Back in a moment, I'll get you your phone calls and emails. And by the way, Portland's fight over a tent city could put Portland back in the crosshairs of a multi-million dollar lawsuit because of Multnomah County.
Is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. You know what I'd love to see a lot of citizens do? If you know a county commissioner in your county, no matter where you are in the Northwest, go to them with this Future 42 idea and say there are areas of the Northwest that are currently taking the approach, we're going to house the heroin and fentanyl addicts first, and we'll get to treatment later on. And of course, that never seems to happen. But these guys are saying, let's go the other direction. Let's say if you're going to get housing subsidized by working taxpayers who are not shooting heroin, not taking fentanyl, then you should say to them, you're only allowed to have this housing if you'll agree to get into treatment and get off the drugs. I think it's a sensible approach. I'd love to see a lot of citizens show up at city councils, county commissioners, commissions, and say to them, will you pass this same thing that Future 42 has done in Snohomish County? And if you won't, explain how the current approach that's been in place for more than a decade, ever since Barack Obama said, I'm going to tie all federal HUD funding to housing first. And if cities won't adopt housing first, then they don't get the federal money. So all these cities and counties, including King County, Multnomah County, Portland, Seattle, all of them said, oh, we want the federal cash. We'll go ahead and do housing first. It has not worked. It is not working now. Now, I mentioned that our X poll today has to do with whether or not women should register for the draft. And Chuck is a naysayer on that. Chuck, welcome to the Radio Northwest Network. How do we disagree that makes you a naysayer today?
My God, name what topic, man? Name.
We disagree on everything?
To include this housing first thing. I mean, what do you guys expect to people, these addicts that are homeless? Like 3 days after you get them enrolled, they're going to be in the next city. So I think it's more of like.
Hold on. After they get enrolled in drug treatment, they're just going to leave town? Well, I guess that solves one problem. But Chuck, does it make any sense? Does it make any sense to tell somebody who's currently a heroin addict, we're going to put you into housing? We have no requirement that you stop heroin or even try. Tell me how that makes sense.
Tell me how it makes sense that we shove these people off from Seattle to Portland to San Francisco to.
I'm not talking about that. I'm saying, Chuck, if you've been listening for the last hour, you know that what I would like to see is people off drugs and alcohol. And here's how it used to work, Chuck. Before Washington State Supreme Court wiped out the drugs law, before Measure 110 wiped out the hard drugs law in Oregon, the way it worked was you got caught with drugs and you went in front of a judge in what they called drug court. And the judge would say to you, you got two choices. You're going to go to trial.
You guys want to defund that, too.
You don't want to hear it, do you?
You don't want to
hear it.
You want to get rid of drug court? You want to get rid of
everything? No, I want drug court back, Chuck. But right now, if they go to a drug addict and say, by the way, we want you to go into treatment. And the addict says, and what happens if I don't? They say, nothing. Nothing happens. Well, what would have happened four years ago? And the answer is, oh, we'd have given you no choice. A felony conviction and a trip to jail, probably for a short time, but a felony conviction. Or you can go into treatment, and if you'll stay on the wagon for a year, we'll wipe out the felony conviction altogether. Chuck, that was very attractive to addicts. A lot of them took that option.
Right. These people are going to be crawling out of their tent and sleeping bag to go to treatment.
Chuck. Do you think if you're addicted to hard drugs that you can hold down a job?
Yeah.
You can? What kind of job do you do when you're addicted to heroin? Do you go down to Target I'll be here at the cash register full of money, but I need on my break to go off to the restroom and shoot some heroin? Do you think that works with any job?
What world do you live in, man? I mean, that happens every day.
One where you don't use heroin, fentanyl, cocaine, or meth. And I want people off those drugs. I wanted my dad off alcohol in the worst way. Never happened. But it doesn't mean I didn't tell my dad, by the way, now that you're retired, you can drink all day long with no consequence. Would anybody want that? And tell me this, Chuck, do you have any friends who are alcoholics?
I'm an alcoholic, but no, whatever. You know, that doesn't mean anything. But
Well, maybe that's affected your thinking. But Chuck,
I'm not a homeless guy. You know, I'm not a homeless guy.
No, you're not. You pay your bills, right? Now, if a friend of yours who's become homeless because he's run through all his friends, all his family, he's lost his job, he's boozed up, and he says, I'd like to come and live at your house, Chuck. Can I keep on drinking while I'm at your house with all the, you know, all the side effects of that? Would you say, that's fine. Come live at my house. I'll let you sleep in my house. I'll let you stay here and eat at the table and stay drunk all day long if you want. Would you do that?
Okay.
Would you?
Well, would you?
No. In fact, when my dad moved... Hold on. I try to live up to what I say. When my dad moved back to the Portland area, he passed away some time ago. But when he moved back, both Tina and I said, you can stay at our house till we find you an apartment. It was a few months. But no drinking. You start drinking, you're out. And I'll bet you, Chuck, I get calls and emails all the time from people who say to their kids, their adult kids, you want to move back home? Great. Don't bring the drugs. If you bring drugs into our house or you start boozing at our house, you're out the door. And sometimes
that's a whole different thing. You know,
why is that different when you're getting it from people you love than when you're taking it from total strangers? You know, do you want to do what LA is doing right now? They just built a high rise apartment building at $600,000 per apartment to house people who are still addicted to drugs. They're giving them a $250,000 apartment so they can shoot their drugs in the really nice apartment with a nice view at the expense of taxpayers. Chuck, sounds like you're the kind of guy who'd vote for that sort of thing. You got the Lars Larson Show.
The Lars Larson Show.
In exactly 15 seconds, we'll be on the air.
Lars. This is the Lars Larson Show.
Look, if you hate cops just because of cops, the next time you get in trouble, call a crackhead.
Honestly provocative talk with Lars Larson.
I may be a white boy, but I'm not stupid.
Broadcasting across the Pacific Northwest and covering Oregon, Washington, and Idaho on the Radio Northwest Network.
Lars.
And now.
Then we're going to kick the Biden crime family out of the White House.
Here's your host.
My memory is so bad, I let you speak.
Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I'm glad to get to your phone calls and emails. We've got something very important to talk about. At least I think it is. A measure that is likely to make the November ballot. This is in Oregon, not Washington, that promises, get this, free money for everybody, every citizen of every age. And when I say citizen, I probably have to include Joe Biden's newcomers, the undocumented Democrats who've been flooding into the country. Doesn't look like there's anything that would restrict them receiving this money, $750 a year. You say, wow, free money that comes from nowhere. That's amazing. Well, we're going to get an explanation of that. And who's going to be paying the money that funds that $750 annual check? It's coming from the very people that most of us buy everything from, our food, our housing, our clothing, our household goods, gasoline, the whole nine yards. They're going to pay it. And if your natural objection to that is, well, Lars, if they have to pay higher taxes, aren't they just going to pass the cost along to the people who are getting the $750 a year? I think the simple answer is yes. You say, well, then the money just goes around in a big circle, right? Yeah, I'm sure government will take its cut. But to get an explanation of this, Jason Williams, founder of the Taxpayer Association of Oregon, great friend of the show, joins me now. Jason, welcome back.
Yes, I mean, you're right here. This is a big tax. It's a 3% tax on large corporations, which 3% is the profit margin for a lot of grocery stores. So guess what? It's going to take away the profit at a grocery store. So you're going to pay $1,000 more in higher grocery prices just for the government to be able to write you a check for $750.
And somehow $1,000 paid that is going to have to be paid by customers of the grocery store to get $750 back, that doesn't sound like a very good deal to me. I mean, I'm a simple guy, but that doesn't sound like like it works out well for me, does it?
No, and this is, and as the media reported on this measure, this is part of a universal basic income experiment where they want to be able to just give citizens money. They try to do this on a month, on a monthly basis in Canada, Finland. It didn't work. Now they want to do it here in Oregon. Already it's being experimented on, here this year, a pilot program Kotex is doing where they're giving $1,000 checks to homeless youth, and if they have committed a crime or if they are a legal migrant or if they are and some other issues, they actually get pushed up in the line, pregnancy being one of them. But they're just handing out $1,000 checks to people. So now this part, this idea, this initiative 17, they want to be able to say, okay, well, we could do it statewide, $750 per person, if you've been in the state for 200 days. So now we're going to have people come to Oregon just to collect this, just like they did with the hotel where the state said, we're going to make this hotel for new migrants near the airport. California, a California nonprofit heard about it and says, hey, let's start sending our migrants up to take advantage of the free hotel in Portland. And they did, and it cost us $30 million.
And once they get here, they're not just going to get the $750, they're signing up for other things. So, Jason, is there anything in this measure that says that it goes only to citizens and their children? Or is this just going to be $750 a year for everybody who shows up, legal or not?
My read of it is that if you can produce certain documentation, like if you can produce a driver's license, even a driver's license from another state, and that you say that you've been here for 200 days, or I guess with the matricular card, the ambassador card from another country.
Oh, the matricular consular from Mexico. Yeah.
Yeah, so there are certain documents that if you can say, hey, this is a proof of who I am, I've been here 200 days, then they will give you, you could actually, the way I read it so far is you could actually show up to the Department of Revenue and they will give you money right there as long as you have it. Other people, they can claim it on their taxes, but they're allowing people to go up and accept it, go right up to government like an ATM and say, I want my free $750.
Jason, when somebody says, I've been here 200 days, how are they going to establish that, and how much vetting can we expect?
I don't think any at all, and that's the problem. People come here. Portlandia has been called Freelandia in homeless shelters across the country. That's why we saw our homeless jump 20% while it only went up 1% in the country. I repeat that. It went up by about 20% here in Oregon while it only went up 1% in the country because we are taking in all of the homeless. We, homeless know that they come here and they can get welfare benefits that are nearly a half a year longer than other states. They know they can get free crack pipes. They can get free tents. They can get, free clothes. They can get just about everything that they need.
And weed is legal and hard drugs are effectively legal. This is Initiative Petition 17. Now, the folks behind this have already turned in 130,000 signatures. When do we find out if this is going to make the ballot?
Between now and probably July 10th, we'll know. But they submitted 135,000, well above the normal. And about $1 million of that campaign money came from one source, a guy in California. So we're talking about someone else using Oregon as an experiment. Last time someone did that with out-of-state money, it was
Measure 110.
Decriminalizing drugs. Yeah,
effectively legalizing drugs. Sorry, my crazy studio dog Winston is objecting to all of this. Now, a number of years ago, Jason, I would have been confident to say, this is going to go on the ballot in November, but there is no way that sensible working folks who have to buy their groceries and their gas, in some cases their housing, all their household goods, from corporations who are going to pay this tax, and even without a crayon and construction paper, they can figure out that if the tax goes on the corporations will pass it along to consumers, and this thing will get voted down. Should I be confident it'll be voted down by today's current population of voters?
I think we have a good chance once we realize that this is going to cost people more money. I mean, you cannot hit companies with 3% tax. It's just, we already have companies leaving Oregon. They're leaving here because we're one of the highest tax places in North America. And the tax, there was like 14,000 taxpayers that fled Multnomah County. They're leaving. They're taking their taxes with them and all that tax revenue. We can't tax ourselves, into poverty while trying to chase self-prosperity.
By the way, before we hit the break, Jason, I got to tell you this. One of the most valuable things Taxpayers Association of Oregon could do, I know when people hear large corporations north of $25 million, all they're thinking about is Nike, Intel, Boeing, et cetera. But they may have to understand that there are a lot of businesses that are just, like you said, grocery stores that make gross $25 million a year. They're going to be subject to this. I'd love to see a list of the kinds of companies, even by name. This is the kind of company that has revenue north of $25 million a year. They will be paying the 3%. And do you think they're going to pass it on to you? And most people will know the answer to that. Glad to be with you. Jason, thanks for what you do at the Taxpayers Association. In a moment, government internet and Joe Biden is pouring in tens of billions of dollars. We'll get to that in your phone calls coming up next on the Lars Larson Show.
may talk about serious issues, but even Lars has a sense of humor.
I have a joke for you. The government in this town is excellent and uses your tax dollars efficiently.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the program. It's a pleasure to be with you. And I can tell you right now, my job is made much easier by the existence of the internet. I mean, I've been taught since I was a little kid to look things up. My dad pounded that into me. He said, look, if you are wondering about something, look it up. Now, we had Encyclopedia Britannica and lots of books in the house. And the internet is great for that. In fact, it usually amazes me when people say, well, gosh, how many police officers does Seattle have? Or, you know, how much money is paid out in this or that in the Tri-Cities or Spokane or Eugene or Medford or wherever? And I think, why don't you just look it up? I mean, it's as close as your phone. So the internet is a great thing. I'm not disputing that. It's also a great hazard to your family, as those of you know that your kids can get into trouble. And they can even become the victims of criminals who are going after them. Even adults can become the victims of internet criminals. But Joe Biden has decided that he wants to have high-speed internet to connect all Americans. And he has a plan that especially addresses the problem of people who live in rural areas. If you live a long ways outside of town, you may not have internet available to you, although it has expanded dramatically, especially over-the-air internet, meaning, for the most part, cell towers and things like that. But guess what? Joe Biden has decided he loves the idea of high-speed internet for everybody, even folks who live in the sticks, that he wants to spend $42 billion of your money. And in fact, technically, he's already spent the money, $42 billion. And guess when that program started? It started in 2021, 3 years ago. So you got $42 billion. You've had the last 3 years. How many Americans are now connected to high-speed internet thanks to Joe Biden's internet connectivity program? And the answer is zero. Not a single person has been connected. Now, there are a number of reasons for that, none of them good. But I want to talk about that because I want to warn you that when the government says why people need to have internet, number one, an awful lot of the use of the internet is for shopping and watching movies. And don't deny it. I know that everybody out there who wants to have free internet provided, free meaning free to you, not so free to the taxpayers who end up funding it. But they say, I'm doing this because I want my child to be able to write term papers on complicated subjects. Or I have a business and I have to run the business on the internet. Well, if you have a business and you need internet connectivity, the cost of connecting to the internet has gone down dramatically in the last 10 years. The availability of the internet is more than 90% across America. And if you say, well, but I decided to live a long, long ways from paved roads. I decided to live way out in the countryside because I like it out here. That's good. Living in the countryside is wonderful. I admire and I envy the people who live way out of town. I'm not as crazy about living in a big city because big cities have become kind of toxic lately. But there's a cost. If you live out of town, deliveries take longer. Everything takes longer. And you say, plus, I want to have internet. Well, there's a way to do that. But it's not to turn to the government and say, would you please spend $42.45 billion to deploy high-speed internet to every single corner of the United States of America? Now, that's what they did. Brendan Carr, who's a GOP-appointed commissioner on the FCC, said in 2021, the Biden administration got $42.45 billion from Congress for high-speed internet to millions of Americans. Years later, it has not connected even one person with all that money. In fact, it now says that no construction projects to add this internet service will even start until 2025 at the earliest, and it may be later than that. So, you have a massive amount of taxpayer money to fulfill a need that I think Americans should fulfill on their own. If you want, I have high-speed internet. Why? Because it's necessary for what I do. And you know who pays for it? I pay for it. And if you want to have slow-speed internet, that's okay. If all you do is a little bit of emails from text messaging, you can choose that. If you decide that you want to work from home and you want to have high-speed internet, you want to have real-time connectivity to the whole world, you can do that too. And who should pay the cost? The second issue is this, and I decided to do a little bit of math on this. They've allocated more than $42 billion. And I got to thinking, they're going to go out with this money, if these projects start next year, 4 years after the money was allocated, 4 years after Joe Biden announced it, they can go out and start putting copper wire and fiber into the ground. And that's a very expensive proposition. If you know anything about that, and I only know as the consumer, the customer, but if you tell somebody, hey, I live a long ways up a road and I want to have power, I want to have water, I want to have sewer, or I want to have internet, it is going to cost you a lot of money to lay all of that in the ground. It's much easier to do in high population centers where one wire might connect thousands of users or one piece of fiber. Well, if you want to do that, go ahead and do it, but do it on your own dime. But the other problem is this. The Biden administration took this thing and they tied it up with a whole bunch of DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion. They tied it up with CRT, critical race theory, and they said all of these projects have to be subject to these other social goals that the Biden administration wants to achieve. So they don't just want to connect you to the internet. And believe me, I know there are going to be people who say, well, gosh, Lars, I live a long ways out. I'd like to get internet, and I don't want to pay the cost of laying that line just out to my house and the few neighbors who live where I do. Let me point something out, and I have no dog in the fight other than that I use this service. There's a service called Starlink, and yeah, it was put together by Elon Musk. I like some of what he's done. I don't like other things he's done. But one of the things he's done is he's created a way to put internet to just about any spot on planet Earth with a little dish about the size of a pizza pie. And I've got one on my roof. And why? Because I need to be connected to do the job I do. And who pays the cost of it? I do. And is the cost prohibitive? It really isn't. And believe me, I don't do commercials for Starlink. I don't get some kind of cut rate from Starlink. I'm just a customer. But imagine this. If you were going to take that $42 billion, and instead of going out and doing all this construction and burying all these copper wires and all this internet fiber cable all over America, how many people would you be able to hook up? Well, Starlink costs about $600 for the equipment. It then costs about what you would pay at home for internet that's coming in on a pair of copper wires, about $100, $120 a month. And I thought, wow, seems like you could hook up an awful lot of people. Well, I did the math. You could hook up almost 9 million Americans, buy the equipment for them, if you decided to go that direction, and pay the monthly fees for the next 3 years. That's assuming that you want people to get free internet where they don't pay a dime to get it. Now, everybody who gets something free is usually happy to get it. But in this case, if you could hook up 9 million Americans to a system that doesn't take digging up the landscape and planting a whole bunch of fiber and copper in the ground, but instead just get it from the satellites that are orbiting the planet, wouldn't that be a better way to deliver it? Some of the Biden administration's plans, especially on places like Indian nations, they are connecting people where it costs more than $50,000 per household to connect somebody to the internet. And they could buy a $600 dish and put it on the roof and pay for the fees for the next dozen years for a far lower amount of money. So I think it's kind of crazy. But even if you like the plan, the fact that they rolled it out 3 years ago and funded it and they still haven't connected a single person, that's a pathetic, I guess, epitaph for the Biden administration.
The Lars Larson Show. What a vegan actually is?
They say cows are bad for the environment because all they do is eat plants and fart, just like vegans.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you. And in the interest of full disclosure, we have a lot of social media outlets for the Lars Larson Show. YouTube is not one of them. And one of the reasons we've never gone on YouTube is that there's no point in building a following on a site that has been known over the years for its censorship of content. Now, if you censor content to take off illegal things, immoral things, yeah, I guess I'm okay with that. I don't want to see drug dealing. I don't want to see child molestation, all that garbage. They're right to take that down. But YouTube has famously censored a lot of things, and yet I got the impression recently that they'd gone an entirely different direction until now. The other disclosure I have is I own guns and I believe in the Second Amendment. So it makes me wonder why YouTube is now specifically censoring Second Amendment videos and why that's happening right now. Aiden Johnson joins me now, Director of Federal Affairs at Gun Owners of America. Aiden, welcome back to the program.
Thanks for having me back.
What is going on here that YouTube has decided to specifically start going after content that is pro-Second Amendment, pro-gun?
Yep, so just last week, YouTube increased its censorship of Second Amendment content, which is awful. The new policy change says that if they think your firearm is homemade, they're going to start censoring your content. If they think that you're firing automatically, they're also going to start censoring your content. And it's not clear how they're going to know whether or not your firearm was made in a factory or homemade, or whether or not if you're just firing a semi-automatic or a revolver or any other firearm quickly, if it will be counted as automatic. They don't really have a standard that they've set. But if your firearm falls into one of these subjective, vague categories, they're going to age restrict it. And that's not just so that, oh, okay, kids don't see this. When you're age restricted, you don't show up in YouTube's algorithm, and you're effectively unable to reach your audience that's subscribed. You won't show up on the homepage, and you'll only get notifications and people who search out your content explicitly. So this is really going to hurt all of the gun YouTubers who are still on the platform and are still trying to reach those gun owners that still watch YouTube.
And by the way, some content for kids involving guns I think would be great. The whole Eddie Eagle program, I know that comes from the NRA, not GOA, but I think both groups have valuable stuff. The NRA has had Eddie Eagle for a long time, specifically aimed at kids. Now, I don't know if they put it on online, but it's a great program. It tells younger kids, if you run into a firearm and there's no adult present, stop, don't touch, leave the area, tell an adult. And other programs work the same way. It's a sensible message that you can only get to kids if you go through social media. So what's driving this change by YouTube? Do you know? Do you have any idea?
Well, I would also note that there's lots of content for example, about high school shooting sports teams, or for how to go hunting if you're, a younger adult or something like that. There's lots of content that someone who's under 18 that also has a firearm with the permission of their parents might want to access on YouTube. I think that YouTube is really just trying to crack down and bend to the anti-gun lobby. What happened here was all these anti-gun groups and all kinds of anti-gun politicians, including senators from Congress and also Alvin Bragg, the guy who's attacking President Trump in New York, have sent letters to YouTube saying, hey, why do you allow this? What's wrong with you? You need to age restrict this kind of content. And really what they're trying to do is attack lawful Second Amendment content that's posted on YouTube. Because if you look at this policy, there's actually an exception for movies, for video games, for military police footage, war zone footage. Like, why wouldn't you think that war zone footage or someone getting arrested or all these things, maybe we should automatically age restrict that if it's someone getting blown up in a war zone. But no, we're not going to automatically age restrict that. But if you show someone how to use an AR-15, that's going to get age restricted.
Well,
I think that's absurd.
By the way, Aiden, the first time I ever got a chance, and it was before cell phones and cell phone cameras and all that, but I went to a police range because I had some friends who were cops, and they said, hey, do you want to shoot a Heckler and Koch M&P5? And I said, yeah, I'd love to shoot one. Well, come on down to the range. And we did. Now, if cell phones had been around at the time, I'm reasonably sure, Aiden, that I would have said to one of them, hey, when I fire this, will you shoot some video? And I might have wanted to post it. That was legal. It's also legal in a number of states to own machine guns made before 1986, if you have the right tax stamps and all that ATF nonsense, that you can do that. They're going to restrict even that stuff, even if it's legal?
Yeah, no, that's and they said also that content depicting bump stocks will also be banned. And we just had the Supreme Court rule that bump stocks are not machine guns. They're just lawful accessories for a semi-automatic firearm. And now YouTube is banning footage of lawfully owned machine guns, lawfully owned bump stocks, lawfully made homemade firearms. I mean, this is Second Amendment protected activity. There's no reason you wouldn't want to show it to people. There's a lot of people that got into firearms based on video games. A lot of the younger generation, several people here in our office, myself included, my first firearm I bought because I liked shooting it in a video game. And that's, there's an exception for that. And YouTube, the algorithm will show you, if you play video games, sometimes it'll recommend you a GunTube video. And there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. I think it's ridiculous, though, that these companies can make money off, and YouTube can make money off of guns and video games and reviews of guns and video games. But then if you make that real and you say this is lawful Second Amendment protected activity, now all of a sudden that's banned from their platform. And by the way, Hollywood, which hates firearms, hates the Second Amendment, but loves to put violence in their movies, their stuff's not going to be age-restricted, just you being a law-abiding gun owner.
Now, you and the GOA have called out YouTube for doing this. There's a huge percentage of American households where at least one member of the household owns a gun. And even if they don't happen to own fully automatic guns, machine guns or rifles, they're not going to like this. Do you think YouTube is going to lose on this, as the American public says, well, if that's the attitude you take toward gun owners, legitimate, lawful gun owners, I don't want anything to do with your content at all.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's over 1 in 3 households in the United States has a firearm. So it's millions and millions of American citizens. And where YouTube's really gone too far here is by censoring lawful content, right? You mentioned earlier that crimes and stuff should be censored. And actually, YouTube has protections for if their users post criminal stuff, YouTube is not liable under Section 230.
Yep.
But they don't have the ability to just censor absolutely everything from their content, from their platform. That's censoring free speech that's supposed to be protected if YouTube's going to get this government protection from Section 230. So YouTube's definitely going too far by restricting lawful automatic firearms and bump stocks and all these other kinds of things that they've just added to this policy. So it goes too far, and we're investigating what to do about that. Gunners of America has sent a letter to YouTube demanding answers, and just this past week, Congressman Jim Jordan and the Weaponization Committee subpoenaed YouTube, or rather the parent company Alphabet, to find out who's behind this, whether or not they were pressured, what government agencies were weaponized, and to figure out what we can do to actually protect gun YouTube and all the millions of Americans that still watch it.
And by the way, if somebody posts a commentary, say, on a group of criminals who've been arrested, but it features the automatic weapons that were seized by the police, is that going to be censored as well?
You know, they have exceptions for the press and for police footage, and it's bad because the you're still going to see these absurd videos from, like, CNN where they say, oh, here's how a bump stock works, and it's totally wrong. And if you post a video of a bump stock or how it works, you're going to get banned, but CNN's got the exception. So they're still going to get to use YouTube to push against your rights. Meanwhile, you'll be censored from the platform, and millions of Americans that grow up and use YouTube will think, oh, firearms content is bad, and will never have it recommended to them.
Unbelievable. That's Aiden Johnson. And Aiden, I'm glad we stayed away from YouTube. I'll continue to do that. That's Aiden Johnson with Gun Owners of America. I'll get to your phone calls and emails in just a moment. And on the Radio Northwest Network, I'll tell you about a city council that chickened out to the woke mob. Owning investment.
At least someone has a plan for illegal aliens.
Back in the White House, I will terminate every open borders policy of the Biden administration and begin the largest deportation operation in American history.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the program. It's a pleasure to be with you. The X poll today on the Lars Larson Show: should America require women to register for the draft? I would say no to that. And if you wonder whose crazy idea is that, Democrats in the United States Senate have added that amendment to the annual defense authorization bill to require women to register for the draft. The Democrats want women to register for the draft. The Republicans are opposing the idea. That's generally the picture that's drawn right now. I don't think it's a good idea, and I don't think anybody's going to persuade me that it is. The X poll is found at Lars Larson Show and is brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Find them at ultimatetruckservice.com. Let's go to Kip who's a naysayer. Kip, welcome to the program. Hello, Kip.
Yes, I'm here. I think you're wrong about the internet. I live in rural Hope County. And they're out there drilling now to put lines in for Spectrum to come up and supply us with internet.
For Spectrum, that's a private company. That's not part of the Joe Biden project.
It's not? What is it then?
Well, I'm telling you, if my source, Kip, and I always try and quote a source, is a commissioner of the FCC, the Federal Communications Commission, that's overseeing this project. He is a Republican, but his name is Brendan Carr, and he says the program was announced by Joe Biden and funded 3 years ago, and not a single person has been connected. Now, if you tell me that Charter or whoever is putting in the cable internet in your neighborhood is using part of this program, then apparently that's a detail not known to the FCC that's overseeing the project. Who should I believe?
Well, I don't know if you want to believe me or not, Lars, but I'll tell you the facts. I've been here for 20 years. We all have small acreages, you know, anywhere from 5 to 20 acres.
Kip, you're getting way off the topic. How do you know this is part of Joe Biden's project?
No, I'm not, Lars. Let me finish. I've been trying for 20 years to get somebody to come up here, and they say it's not economically feasible.
And it's
not. Spectrum all of a sudden figures out it's economically feasible, and it's not, then they have to be getting money from the government.
Okay, that's an interesting piece of logic, but again, it doesn't tell me it's part of this program. And if the FCC commissioner is saying not a single person has been connected, I think I'm going to believe the federal agency that's overseeing the project and not an individual consumer who doesn't know. Let's go to Carl, who's another naysayer. Carl, what do we disagree about today?
Well, I got to tell you, it's the drug thing, the legalized drug thing.
Yeah.
And it's only because we could take the approach of an escape from New York scenario. Send them all to an island, cut the island off, and let them, you know, produce their own drugs, police their own people.
Interesting idea. I'm not sure you're necessarily a naysayer, but there you go. Let's go to John. John, thanks for listening on the Radio Northwest Network. What's on your mind?
Thanks, Lars. Hey, just to follow up on the gentleman regarding YouTube, he's absolutely correct regarding pro-Second Amendment content restrictions. I'm a content creator out of Willamette Valley, and there is a workaround, and I actually show firearms training. I actually travel the country, and I train law enforcement and military on Instagram. And Instagram, when you become verified, they assign you like an account holder. And as long as you tell them what's your purpose, what's your intent, they don't mess with you. And then, of course, the alternative is Truth Social, but I haven't gone that route yet. But Instagram is definitely the way to go. And being a former Oregon Park Ranger, it gives me a little bit of a credibility as to what I'm talking about as far as teaching things. And I'm also NRA, and it's pretty open. I'm conservative. I'm from Oregon, not Portland, but I'm from Oregon, and it gets respected pretty well at the other states.
Well, and I guess just for the life of me, the gentleman from GOA makes a good point. Why is YouTube restricting legal use of firearms and legal display of any of that information? You would think that would be good information, you know, if it's legal. Now, you know, if there's some gangbanger out there who's got an illegal, fully automatic weapon, fine, keep him off. But why would you restrict people who are going by the law?
That's the million-dollar question. Actually, gangbangers and acts of violence that involves firearms are viewable. I teach homeowners to train force on force, and my content constantly gets restricted because it shows firearms. And all I'm doing is showing people how to be responsible gun owners. But yet, an individual that's flashing money and guns at the same time has copious amounts of views. And I'm like, what is wrong with these people here? Who's watching it? So I stopped.
Maybe, John, it's the hunter exception. What do you think of that? I mean, if you've got the son of the president who famously has appeared buck naked with prostitutes, cocaine, and guns, maybe they've carved out, maybe YouTube is so far to the left that they've carved out a special Hunter Biden exception.
It has to be. Maybe I need to add that as a hashtag. It's my way in.
Unbelievable. John, tell people where to find your service. I don't know you, but tell them where to find your instructional service.
Absolutely. I've been listening for a long time. So I work for KWA, and I'm actually the only guy out of Oregon, and I travel the country, and you can go to kwa-training.com. Instagram, Grounded Tactical, that's the one. I sell Let's Leave a Training.
And the Lars Larson Show.
You ready for the big show?
In exactly 15 seconds, we'll be on the air.
Lars. This is the Lars Larson Show.
Look, if you hate cops just because they're cops, the next time you get in trouble, call a crackhead.
Honestly provocative talk with Lars Larson.
I may be a white boy, but I'm not stupid.
Broadcasting across the Pacific Northwest and covering Oregon, Washington, and Idaho on the Radio Northwest Network.
Lars.
And now.
Then we're going to kick the Biden crime family out of the White House.
Here's your host.
My memory is so bad, I let you speak.
Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you on Conspiracy Theory Thursday. I encourage you to vote in our poll on X. The question today, should women be required to register for the U.S. draft? Now, there is no draft right now, but there is draft registration for all men 19 to 26. And by the way, liberals, that includes your illegal alien friends. Well, Senate Democrats have now added language to the National Defense Authorization Bill that would require all women to register for the draft just like men, and they say that's equality. No, I tend to disagree with that. I'd say no, it's a bad idea, even though I don't expect America to bring back a draft. But when it does happen, men should be registered, women no. But you can vote any way you like. You'll find the question at Lars Larson Show and brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Find them at ultimatetruckservice.com. It's a pleasure to welcome back to the program great friend of the show, Ari Hoffman. He does the talk show on our Seattle affiliate, KVI, and he sits there just a few miles away, I think still, a few miles from University of Washington, which is one of these big universities around America that's gone absolutely crazy. And it raises the question, Ari, do you think that parents are waking up saying, I'm not sending my son or daughter off to that kind of mess, and that these big colleges are going to see major declines in enrollment?
Well, I think it's they're waking up to the fact of why am I spending thousands of dollars when I kept my kids at home and gave them a good education and gave them a religious upbringing and gave them all my values, and then have the school destroy those values and brainwash my kid. And now we're seeing that some other colleges like Emerson College out in Boston, they're having enrollment problems. In fact, they told their staff in an email they sent out that's directly affecting their enrollment, these campus protests that they had. In fact, the quote is, student protests targeting our yield events and campus tours and negative press and social media generated from the demonstrations and arrests are the reason they have declining enrollment, which led to declining revenue, and something that didn't get a lot of attention at the time. While these riots and protests were going on at college campuses, the activists timed them to target recruiting weeks, the weeks where prospective students, especially at Columbia, were coming to see the campus. If you saw that insanity going on, you wouldn't even go there.
So they deliberately attacked the not just the issues they were after, whether it was Gaza or anything else, but they were specifically targeting the college to do damage, not just to the physical end of the college, the buildings, but to damage the college itself in enrollment?
Yes, in fact, at Columbia University, one of our staff members here has a brother who goes there, and he told us that what was happening was they had to assign escorts for the prospective students to guide them around, through, away from all these crazy little Gaza encampments. And here's the thing that is mind-boggling to me, Lars. If you have all this going on, you could have just said no. You knew this was going to jeopardize recruiting, or are they so arrogant to think, oh, we're Columbia, we're Emerson, they're going to come here anyway? Clearly, the answer is we have other options. We're not going anywhere near that place.
No, in fact, it surprises me that the parents or the students took the escort. I would think if you showed up And they said, well, this person has to escort you because there are parts of campus that are physically dangerous to you or your parents. I would think your parents say, get back in the car. We're out of here. I mean, I would imagine you've got little kids, but I would imagine you would do that, wouldn't you, if you're told the campus isn't safe to walk around alone right now? But go ahead, bring your kid over here. And by the way, get your checkbook ready. I don't think that would work out very well.
Here's a comparison for you, Lars. My son, my oldest son, goes to college in Israel. I knew I was safer there than anywhere else. And I feel safer about my kid going to the bomb shelter from time to time because of what's going on in Israel than I would sending him to an American college campus.
They're going to sour. I mean, between this, between the plagiarism scandals, the funding problems, the massive amounts of tuition that's 70 and 80 and 90,000 a year for private colleges, and even stunning numbers for publicly owned universities, you would think that all of this stuff and the indoctrination, that all of this is going to turn off not just parents, but students as well.
I actually think this is an opportunity for conservatives. If conservatives send their kids to trade schools rather than sending them to these big colleges, and I don't mean the kids who want to be doctors or lawyers, but that's a whole nother discussion about whether medicine's actually medicine anymore or it's woke ideology. But if we send all our kids to trade schools, then guess what? In a short amount of time, we'll be the only ones who know how to fix toilets. We'll be the only ones who know how to do electrical work, fix cars, and we'll control the unions. I actually think we should be playing the long game that way.
I don't imagine you have to do this, but I've sat down with other younger people who've asked me, and I said, look, here's what's going to happen. You're going to go out for 4 years or 6 years of college. This is what's going to cost you. But don't forget, there's your time as well. If you go into the trades instead, and I was just talking to a guy who pours concrete, you know, he's a contractor, and he said, I'm going to have to start paying my guys full package benefits, vacation, and about $80,000 to $100,000 a year. And I thought, okay, tell the young man or woman who's thinking trades, oh, I don't like that. I want something with a keyboard and a screen. And you say, okay, you can go off and spend $150,000 for 6 years of school. And while you're going to 6 years of school and going $150,000 upside down, this person is out making $600,000. And then when you finally do get a job, it probably won't pay $100,000 a year. So you have a few years of that. At what point do you, going to the fancy college with the diploma and getting the white-collar job, at what point do you even pull even with the person who's earning the salary as the guy in the trades or gal in the trades?
Exactly. And don't forget, they're not paying you to go to these schools anymore. And also, this actually ties into military recruitment, because it used to be, at least then, you were getting a small paycheck from the military, but they're paying off your tuition. Now that everything's free and Joe Biden wants to forgive all these loans, oh, which, by the way, is affecting the economy and is affecting the deficit. Now that all that's going on, what's the incentive to go join the armed forces? I mean, my son wants to go to medical school. We're going to have a talk about that. And he was talking about going to the military to pay it off. But now there's no incentive to go to the military because Joe Biden, the Democrats, are just paying for everything.
Not only that, but they're making the military toxic. Did you see the story about the Democrat congressional staffer who just got his student loans paid off?
Yes, and I looked at it and I did the math and I'm thinking to myself, wait a minute, you could have been paying these off for $40 a month for the past however many years. It was a 14. Small amount too. Right, it was a small amount of money. This is something that you could have paid off in no time at all, and congressional staffers do very, very well. So great, we're paying for the elite staff to pay off their college loans. Bravo.
And by the way, the letter seemed to be very clear. This is being done for you by Joe Biden, and this is 5 months away from an election, or less than 5 months from an election. And this guy, this staffer, this Democrat congressional staffer, was making $96,000 a year. Now, I know that doesn't go as far in Washington, D.C. as it does in a few other places. You're making $96,000 a year, and you can't afford over 14 years to pay off an $8,000 debt for college. Clearly, you know nothing about budgeting, which I guess makes you a very good Democrat staffer. That's Ari Hoffman. He does the talk show after mine on our affiliate station in Seattle. That's KVI. Glad to be with you and glad to take your calls. I'll get to your calls coming up in a moment. And in Texas, a long, hot summer is now promising blackouts as power demand peaks and the ability to actually move electricity from the windmills and such to the people who actually need it. Well, they don't have the wires right now. We'll get into that in a moment. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network. Know your...
A message from Lars.
I'd like to apologize to anyone I've not offended yet. Please be patient. I'll get to you shortly.
Who's next? This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. This is happening in Texas, but I would imagine that anywhere in America that they're trying to sell the fantasy of alternative renewable energy, like windmills and solar panels, this is going to be a problem because, in general, when you build solar panels, when you build windmills, the places you have a lot of space to do that are not the places where people live. They tend not to be just right outside of town. Well, in Texas, they've got that problem. They've got a long, hot summer ahead. They're forecasting a 16% chance of blackouts in August. And a couple of things they're trying to do. Number one, they have a lot of wind energy, but it turns out that where the windmills had to be placed is not where the power consumers are. And the lines between where the windmills are and where the people are, well, they're already carrying a lot of power for other kinds of generation. So they're saying that right now, during midday periods of high demand, last summer, the line became so congested with too much input, meaning you have the power, you just got to move it to where it's going to be used. So this agency called ERCOT, which is tasked with trying to make sure that the state of Texas has enough electricity to keep the lights turned on. It's probably a sensible thing to have that in any given state or any given region. They put out the call to the utility companies saying, hey, by the way, we're heading into possible real problems with power this summer. We need to find 500 megawatts of consumption that we can get rid of. So we're asking you for voluntary congestion plans. And this is in Texas. So guess what happened? The utility companies that are part of this agency came back and said, we can give you 10 megawatts of conservation. We cannot give you 500 megawatts of conservation. The fact that the construction of new thermal generation capacity in high demand regions like Dallas, Fort Worth has failed to keep pace with the demand for growth and demand. The heavy reliance on costly transmission lines, and they cost a bundle of money to move the power generated by wind or solar industrial sites hundreds of miles away to where people are actually using the power. So they've got big problems, and that is not going to be just a Texas problem. That's going to be true almost anywhere in America where you can put up large amounts of solar panels, if you happen to think that's a sensible way, I don't, or windmills. They tend to be far away from the population centers. And there's a second problem I'll point out. In general, when it gets hot, almost any place in America, the wind doesn't blow as much as it does when it's cold. So that means, especially for the southern United States, the days when you need the most power for air conditioning and things like that, the windmills generally aren't going to be turning, and that's a problem too. Let's go to a naysayer. JT, welcome to the program. What's on your mind today?
You're wrong on the spectrum on the internet, Lars, and you need to. I have the program that's federally funded for the internet, and it.
Well, I'm going to tell you something that I also heard from somebody who also buys their internet from Spectrum. He's talked to the manager of the program, and the manager of the program says this is funded by Spectrum. It is not funded by the Joe Biden plan to put in internet to every corner of America. Now, are there subsidy programs that are separate from Joe Biden's idea? I appreciate your attempt to debunk that. The problem is, JT, we got the details nailed down on that, and it just ain't true. Let's go to Rob. Hey, Rob, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. What's on your mind?
Quick comment on yesterday's poll. If you pay in cash, the server gets to determine or decide how much they claim.
Well, not technically, Rob.
That's what I've been told by my friends who work.
I know your friend told you that.
If you tip in cash.
But if you tip in cash and the person does not declare it, do you know you're actually committing a crime?
Well, it's not that they don't declare it. They just decide how much of it they declare.
Well, no. Rob, in any job in America, if you get income, the IRS says income from working a job is income, and you have to declare all of it. If you don't believe me, ask Wesley Snipes. He failed to declare.
That's just what I was told.
I know, but you've been told wrong. Right now, and okay. I've said I'm in favor of Trump's plan to say tips are not taxable income.
Should not be.
I agree. Should not be taxed.
I don't believe.
And what's your reason why? Because I may have a different reason why for you, but...
It's a gift, but...
Yes. Okay, then we're on the same page.
You can give a gift up to $10,000. You have to declare anything over $10,000, but...
Yeah. So if you got an honest-to-God gratuity, it's a gift, it shouldn't be taxable income. Right now it is. But if they change the law, and that's what Trump has proposed, and the bill is already in Congress right now.
All for it.
I'm for it as well. I'm for letting Americans keep as much of their income as they possibly can. Let's go to Jerry. Hey, Jerry, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. What's on your mind? Hey, Jerry. Well, Jerry missed out on his opportunity, unfortunately. I don't know. He was going to ask about what is a woman for purposes of the draft. Well, let me give you a little bit of an explanation on that. And I know this one because right now the Democrats in the U.S. Senate have proposed that women be required to register for the draft. It's actually the center of our X poll. Should America require women to register for the draft? My answer to that is no. And you say, well, what about right now if you don't identify as a man? We actually asked this question several years ago of a guy by the name of Don Benton, who under Donald Trump headed up the Selective Service Agency that carries out the function of registering young men for the draft. In America, if you're between the ages of 19 and 26, you must register for the draft. If you fail to do that, you can find yourself excluded from federal employment. You can find yourself excluded from federal student loans and all the rest of that. Well, one day we got a call because this nonsense about I identify as a woman even though I was born as a man, that nonsense. And we got the question, if you were born male, but you now identify as female, are you required to register for the draft? You're a biological male who now calls himself Susie and wears women's clothes. And the answer is yes. What Benton explained is if you were born a male, then you're required to register for the draft, even if you call yourself something else. Jerry, welcome to the program. What's on your mind? Nah, looks like we lost him altogether. I was hoping to get his comment, but I know that we have at least one Supreme Court justice, and that's Ketanji Brown Jackson, who told the U.S. Senate when she was going through her confirmation hearings that she was not a biologist, so she couldn't define what a woman is or what a woman is not. But the Democrats apparently know what women are, and they have decided that they are going to add language to the NDAA, which is the National Defense Authorization Act. And what they want to do is require that women register for the draft. Now, what seems strange about this, a couple of things seem strange about this to me. Number one, I don't think this is going to be popular with the young women who have to register for the draft. And the Democrats must know that. So if they're trying to influence, especially young males and females to vote for Joe Biden, why would they vote for the party that's backing the idea that women must register for the draft? I mean, there may be some real hardcore women out there who are 20 years old who say, yeah, if men have to register, we should have to register too. There may be a few of those, but I don't think there are very many. I think they're vastly outnumbered by the young women who would say, I shouldn't have to register for the draft. Why is the Democrat Party pushing that idea? And Thea, if you have an answer for that, I'd love to hear what it is. Glad to be with you and glad to take your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. You're listening to The Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network.
The Lars Larson Show. And now, this musical message to anyone who wants to indoctrinate our school children.
Hey, teacher, leave the kids alone.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the program. It's a pleasure to be with you. I'm always glad to get to your calls, and I'll do that in just a moment at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Got a little excited there. Send emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. You can also vote in our poll on X whether or not the Democrats' idea that women must register for the draft for selective service is a good idea or not. I frankly don't understand why they're going that direction at all. Probably some twisted, perverted idea of equity or something like that. Instead, I want to talk about what happens when somebody is trying to gather petition signatures and she's doing something that's allowed. It's a constitutionally protected right. And then she faces retaliation from the local government. Jim Burling joins me, Vice President of Legal Affairs at Pacific Legal Foundation. Jim, you folks are representing Ms. Gonzalez, are you not?
No, that's actually another entity that's doing that. We have been involved as a friend of the court in similar cases.
Would you mind telling my audience what happened to Ms. Gonzalez, why she ended up with so much trouble?
Yeah, so she ran basically on a platform to get rid of the city manager. She didn't like the city manager, thought the guy was doing a terrible job, et cetera, et cetera. So she got elected to the city council, and she had a little bit of trouble getting onto the city council. The city manager tried to block her. That didn't work. She had to go to court, but she eventually got on the city council. And when she was there, she went and started collecting signatures on a petition drive to have the city manager removed. Well, that wasn't very popular either with the city manager or the other members of the city council. And she presented the petition, and there were questions raised about the petition, and the papers were going back and forth. And at one point in the process, she took the petition and put it in her briefcase or a brief bag, and it was there at the city council meeting. And she was asked, well, did you take that? She said, no, I don't think I took it. She says it was by mistake. Other people think, well, she deliberately took it. Doesn't matter. She had it in her possession, and she was charged a little while afterwards with taking a government document without permission, basically interfering with a governmental process. And she was actually arrested for that and spent a night in jail for that. And she argued, okay, I did, I picked up the petition, and it was clearly that I had done that. I'm not denying that. But I really am just being prosecuted because I was doing something that was very politically unpopular in this little small town politics. And nobody else, she said, got charged with anything similar to this. The only other people that got charged over the years with issues dealing with interfering with government documents are people invading in fraud, tax fraud, drug crimes, things of that nature that she had nothing to do with. So the question before the court is, could she even raise this as a defense? The Fifth Circuit had said that she could only raise this issue in defense if she could prove that there were other people who were not arrested for doing the exact same thing. Well, come on, how many people are involved in taking petitions to the city council and then accidentally, or not accidentally as the case may be, putting them in your briefcase? So the Supreme Court said, no, she has a right to try to prove that this was a politically motivated prosecution, and she doesn't need to prove there is somebody exactly like her in order for her to raise this objection.
No, in fact, I think the first argument you mentioned, which is when she says, look, there are probably lots of people who take home documents from a public meeting, and maybe in some cases the document officially belongs to the government, but they're not doing it intentionally, and they don't get prosecuted for it. In fact, it's the first time I've ever heard of a case like that. Have you ever heard of one?
No, I've never heard of a case like this, because clearly it was politically motivated, and I don't think anybody is really denying that. Look, after she was arrested, the county DA refused to press charges against her, refused to continue the case, and dropped all the charges. I mean, clearly they didn't have a leg to stand on. What she did was innocent or stupid, one or the other, but certainly no requirement that for what she did she'd have to spend time in jail, which she did, and that she should be prosecuted for this. So I think it was clearly political retribution because, nobody in their right mind is going to charge somebody for a crime or an alleged crime like this.
Well, and not only that, but she's the one who created the petition to begin with, then brings it to the city, and then at that point, in the eyes of the law, the document belongs to the city council. Is that why it is viewed as theft?
Apparently, yes. I mean, and there is a point there that she had this petition. She submitted it to the city council. At that point, it becomes city property, and she doesn't have any personal ownership rights over that anymore. And the city has insinuated, well, maybe some of the signatures weren't proper on there. Well, that's the standard thing you look at every petition. When you have any petition for a ballot measure, you always examine all the signatures on the measure. You make sure that they're all valid. And yeah, some of them are going to be thrown out. People or think they live in the county and they don't live in the county, or they sign a petition or whatever. That's pretty standard operating procedure.
Right.
So, yeah, she shouldn't have taken the thing back, but it was hardly a crime to do so.
Well, let me ask you this, Jim, because forgive my partisanship. You know I'm a Trump guy, but it sounds like she's got a lot in common with Trump. And there I see the broader issue, which is, are we entering an era where government has begun to believe, government, you know, in its totality, collectively, has said the people serve us, not the other way around. It's not our job to serve the people. And if you attack somebody in government, not physically, but if you attack them by saying, I want this person removed, then the government will do everything it can. And the government has some pretty broad powers to go after citizens. And they're doing it with Donald Trump. They're doing it with Ms. Gonzalez, saying, if you come after us, don't doubt that we will use all the powers within our, you know, within our reach to be able to go after you. And you think about the various people who go appealing to their local government for a zone change or a permit to open a business or whatever it happens to be. And it sounds like if you're not on the right side with the folks on whatever government is, city, county, state, or federal, that they will come after you.
Yeah, we've seen time and time again people having permits denied to build things because they're unpopular. And you mentioned President Trump, which is quite interesting because one of the cases before the Supreme Court is a question of whether the January 6th rioters, when they went into Congress that day, were obstructing and interfering with government documents. I mean, a very similar issue is going on here. But I don't think what happened in this case is really any kind of predictor of what's going to happen in the government documents case of the January 6th defendants. But the government has tremendous power over everything we do, and that is disturbing because if we object to what the government is doing or if we're politically unpopular, that can be used against us.
Well, and in fact, the Constitution specifically says, I remind my audience of it all the time, you don't just have First Amendment rights of free speech and free religion. You have a right to peaceably assemble, and you have the right to petition your government for redress of grievances, which sounds like what Ms. Gonzalez was doing. And if the new rule is, well, you can petition for redress of grievances, you want the city manager fired? Fine. City Hall is going to come down on you like a ton of bricks.
It is disturbing because, as I said a moment ago, the government has so much power. And when you have constitutional rights, those constitutional rights are only as good as the willingness of the courts and the rest other branches of government to enforce them. And if you look at constitutional rights as something that can be violated if you're politically unpopular, that is quite disturbing. And that is a road that I hope we do not go down any further.
You and me both. That's Jim Burling from Pacific Legal Foundation. I'll get to your calls in a moment at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. And you're listening to the Radio Northwest Network.
Always ask Lars if he wants to run for public office, like president.
Do you know how much power I'd have to give up to be president?
This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the program. The question, should America require women to register for the draft? I'd say no. The Democrats have actually added it to the National Defense Authorization Bill. They want women to register for the draft, the way young men between the ages of 19 and 26 have to register. And if they don't, there are some consequences. They're not nearly enforced as much as they should be. But do I believe that America should require women to register for the draft at the same age as men? Nope. And a gentleman wrote to me and said, well, what if they could voluntarily register? I said, registration does nothing right now. If a young woman wants to sign up for military service, God bless her. She can do that right now. But why make them go through the process of registering women for the draft if, number one, we don't have a draft? Number two, God help us, I hope we don't end up having a draft. or the need as a nation to have to draft people into military service. That ended in the mid-1970s. I've always thought that an all-volunteer military is a superior military. Everybody is there because they chose to be there. Now, some people regret their choices, but these days, the way that they have made the military so toxic, the president of the United States has said he will not back a pay raise for the lower ranking members of our military. And now his party is saying, let's force women to be registered for the draft. I'd say no. You can vote any way you like. You'll find the question at Lars Larson Show and at LarsLarson.com. Brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Find them at UltimateTruckService.com. Yesterday's question went this way. Given the events of the last few years, should American cities that currently provide sanctuary, that is protection from deportation to illegal aliens, put that to a vote? I said yes, and so did 81% of you. I was kind of surprised by the no vote. 19% of you said all these big blue cities that have proudly declared themselves to be sanctuaries for illegal aliens, 19% of you said, no, don't put it to a public vote. And speaking of public votes, I was giving credit the other day to Newcastle, Washington. It's a small town. I think Tina and I have driven through Newcastle, but I don't know much about the town. But they appear to have caved in to the woke mob. Because here's what happened. Last week, the Newcastle City Council had a discussion about whether or not they should fly the gay pride flag at City Hall. And they decided no. Now, it was a vote that was decided by one vote. I think it was 4-3. Well, 2 weeks later, the Newcastle City Council has now decided to flip. And I think that's crazy because I agreed with their approach. If we're going to fly a flag, we will fly the flag of the United States of America. We will fly the state flag. And if there happens to be a Newcastle City flag, fly that one. Leave all the other politicking out of the flag that flies in front of City Hall. You want to fly the flag at your house? Go ahead. You have a business. You want to put up the gay pride flag to signal to people that you're taking a position on that? Go right ahead. But at City Hall, that represents the entire community. And here's where I'd say the test could be done. If you put that to a vote of the entire community, City Hall was largely listening to a few loud activists that when the city council said, we're not going to fly the pride flag, we're not going to fly any other political flags, and imagine how many different flags that could be. You could have people say, I want to fly the MAGA flag. Well, if you're going to fly the pride flag, how are you going to turn down the Make America Great Again flag? That doesn't make any sense. And I'll bet if you put it to a public vote saying, should the city of Newcastle or any city in the Northwest be flying flags based on people's politics, or should they only display Old Glory, the state of Washington flag, and if there is one, a City Hall flag? Put it to a vote of the community and see how it comes out. The other thing I wanted to mention is this. The head track and field coach at Lake Oswego High School, this is in Oregon, says that the school district terminated his contract. And why? What had he done that was so bad that they said, we are going to end your contract? He wrote two letters to the executive director of the Oregon Student Activities Association, the OSAA, which is the sanctioning body for student sports primarily, John Parks. And he wrote two letters. He wanted to protect young female athletes from having to compete against biological males who now say they identify as something else. He said that in the letters he wrote, the current state law that protects athletes who wish to compete against the gender that aligns with their gender identity compromises the integrity of girls' sports. I tend to agree with him. And I would imagine that the vast majority of parents and even student athletes would agree with him. Well, guess what happened? He wrote this. The OSAA competition rules need to be aligned with what the rest of the world competes under. My proposal to encourage transgender participation is to offer an open division, a transgender division, that is so named so it does not identify or discriminate, but offers an opportunity to participate. Now, the school district didn't like that. Lake Oswego High School didn't like that. So the district terminated his contract. Now, just understand what's going on here. You can have an honest disagreement. I happen to believe that biological girls should not have to run track and field or swim or compete in any other school sport against biological males. That's my point of view. You can have a different point of view. But it seems that if you take a point of view that is out of step with the woke mob out there, the woke mob is going to go to whoever you work for, and they're going to say, get rid of that person. We can't allow that point of view. Now, is that the America you want to live in? Glad to get your emails. talk@LarsLarson.com. And I'm happy you're listening to the Radio Northwest Network. The Lars